Well, good morning. What a blessing. It has been so incredible to be here this weekend. Yesterday at noontime, went to lunch and we had Blaze Pizza. Anybody had Blaze Pizza? Good. You know how that works? You place your order, you put on your pizza what you want, and then when it's ready, they call your name out. And so I heard Bob. And so I went up to get my pizza, and there were three young men. Couldn't have been more than about 10, 11 years old, maybe 12. And one guy says, "Bob, that's a nice name." I thought maybe his name was Bob. I said, "You know, it's great because you can spell it frontwards or backwards, and it's the same." And I said, "Is that your name?" He goes, "No." Okay. And so they told me their names, and I said, "Well, it's really nice to meet you." And he said, "Your head sure is shiny." I'm like, "What kind of kids are you raising here?" "Your head sure is shiny." I told him, I said, "I have to work at it." So I didn't know what else to tell him. You know, I'm not one of those guys that puts a lot of stock in fortune cookies. I mean, they really don't tell the future or your fortune. They're really just kind of proverbial statements that apply to just about everybody. But I have to say, I've had a few that were pretty incredible. For example, it's been about 10 years ago, I accepted the position I was going to take on working as the director of the extension program for the Bear Valley Bible Institute at that time. And so the week before, I was about to take my first trip out of this country. I was headed to Nigeria. The week before, my wife and I, we went down to this little local Chinese restaurant there close to where we lived. And you know how that works. They bring your bill and they bring those little fortune cookies. And so I opened mine up and mine said this: "Your feet shall step on the soils of many lands." I thought that's the most bizarre thing. I saved it. Because I'm telling you, I've stepped on many lands. I've been all over East and West Africa. I've been to Ukraine. I have been to all over Asia, Cambodia and Korea and India and Nepal. I've been to Central and South America. I mean, my feet literally have stepped on the soils of many, many lands. A few years later, and before this is over, you're going to think I like Chinese food. A few years later, we were back there at that same restaurant. And I opened up a fortune cookie and it said this: "God has given you one face. You make for yourself another." That was interesting. You see, God's given us one face, but we make for ourselves another. The idea is character. General Norman Schwarzkopf made the statement in regards to leadership that leadership is the potent combination of strategy and character. And if you must be without one, be without strategy. That's the importance of character. And when we think about how do we define it or how do we determine this idea of character, it's interesting. J.R. Miller said that the only thing that walks back from the tomb with the mourners and refuses to be buried is the character of the man. What a man is survives him. It can never be buried. Character. The idea of character is an interesting study for me. And it's interesting because when we think about it, character is really related to the choices that we make in our life. And oftentimes the choices that we make in life have a great deal to do with shaping our character. And yet at the same time, our character greatly informs the types of choices that we make. To give you an idea of what I'm talking about, the people that we associate with the most, doesn't that say a lot about our character? The types of words that we use in conversation, the activities that we participate in, even down to the very priorities of our life, do they not all speak so much to the idea of our character? And yet we all know that there are people that have such incredible talent, and yet their character isn't what it should be. I've heard the statement that talent is a gift, but character is a choice. And that's really true. How many people have we known, professional athletes, entertainers, musicians, actors, actresses, that have such incredible talent, and yet in a moment of weakness, vulnerability, whatever it is, they make a choice that destroys their character, and it changes the way that we see them. And the same thing is true for us as Christians. It doesn't take much to make a choice in our life, whether it's a moment of weakness or a vulnerability or anger or whatever it is. We say, we do something, and in that moment, it damages our character. The Bible also speaks a great deal about character. In fact, if you have your Bibles and would, let's open up to the book of Psalms. Particularly, let's look at Psalm 15. Psalm 15. We're not going to look at the whole psalm. It's not very long, 5 verses. But we're going to focus on the first 2 verses of this psalm. Psalm 15. Because here, David reveals to us something very important about this idea of character. In verse 1, it begins by asking what many refer to as 2 questions. O Lord, who may abide in your tent, and who may dwell on your holy hill? Now, in the original language, there's what's called a Hebraism. It's the idea of saying 2 different things that really mean the same thing. And for the longest time, I used to think that's what's going on here. David is just simply asking 2 different questions that mean exactly the same thing. And then when I began to look at the words here, that's not what's going on. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? That word abide has to do with entering. It has to do with really just stepping into. But then he says, and who may dwell on your holy hill? That word dwell has to do with staying. So it's not just who is the one who can walk into the tent, but it's who is it that's going to be able to stay. And it has to do with the character of the individual. And he answers the question for us in verse 2. The one who walks with integrity, who works righteousness, and who speaks truth in his heart. I want us to focus on those 3 words for just a few moments. The idea of integrity. When you think about integrity, how do we define that? I've asked people all over the world, how do you define integrity? And I get a lot of different answers. Sometimes we think about the idea of honesty or being truthful. Sometimes we think it has to do with a moral standard or an ethical standard by which we live. But the answer that I get that I like most often is this. Integrity is who you are when no one else is watching. And isn't that really true? I heard it said this way years ago, that being a Christian is who you are in the dark. Isn't that interesting? Are there things that we would say or do, things that we would watch in movies or television, or places that we would go and activities that we would participate in, that we would not do those things or say those things if the preacher were sitting next to us or one of our elders? When that happens, in that moment, we are giving more respect to a man than we are to God, because God sees it all. Integrity. What's interesting about this particular word for me is the fact that when you look at it in the original language, it's used most often in the book of Leviticus. And it's used in connection to the sacrifices that were made. They were to be without defect, or they were to be without blemish, complete, whole. And that's the idea of this word. It's the same word that Peter used in connection to the spotless Lamb of God. And so the one who is going to be able to enter into and stay in God's presence is the one who walks with integrity. But then this idea of righteousness. He works righteousness. Righteousness is also one of those words that I think is important to understand what it means. And when I ask people, the tendency is to say, well, it's doing what's right. Or it's doing what's right in the eyes of God. And I don't disagree with that. I think that's a great answer. The word is very closely associated with the word integrity. It has to do with a very high moral or ethical standard by which someone lives. But I want to share with you something that maybe will give you something to think about a little more deeply in regards to this particular word and why David uses it in the way that he does. In the Old Testament and in the New Testament, this word that is translated righteous or righteousness is also translated as just or justice. And it had to do with not just the relationship of God with His people, but it had to do with the way that God instructed His people to treat others who were less fortunate. In fact, Israel was instructed that when they harvested their crops in their fields, that they were to leave the outer edges and anything that fell off. They were to leave that for the poor, the orphan, the widow, and the stranger in the land. That was God's justice. He was going to take care of those who were less fortunate, and He did that through His people. And any time we find in the Old Testament that Israel did not do that, then God punished them. Now, I want you to think about something in the New Testament in regards to this word, because in the New Testament, it is translated most often as righteous or righteousness. And in the Sermon on the Mount, I want you to think, first of all, about the particular people that Jesus is speaking to. His audience at that moment has to do with those Jewish people who came from an understanding of what God taught them about justice, caring for the poor, the orphan, the widow, and the stranger in the land. And what I'm going to do is use several passages from the Sermon on the Mount, but I'm going to change the word to justice because I want you to think about it from that perspective in the message that Jesus is trying to teach us as it relates to what we find here in Psalm 15. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they shall be satisfied. And then we turn over and we think about the end of chapter 6 there where he says, seek first God's kingdom and His justice, and all these things will be added to you. Have you ever wondered why it is that he didn't just say, seek first God's kingdom and everything will be added to you? I mean, wouldn't that in our minds incorporate everything? But he didn't. He says, seek first God's kingdom and His justice. I find it fascinating in the context where he's saying, do not worry about your life. Don't worry about what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, or what you're going to clothe yourself with. He says, the Gentiles, they think of all these things, and your Father knows that you have need of them. Seek first His kingdom and His justice, and all these things will be added to you. In between these two points, in the very first verse of chapter 6, it says, beware of practicing your justice before men in order to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have your reward in full. And in the very next verse, he talks about giving to the poor. I'm convinced that when we look at the Sermon on the Mount and the message that Jesus was trying to get across to these people, and the message for us, the life that Jesus lived was one that was taking care of those who were less fortunate. And the one who is going to come into and dwell in the presence of God is going to live a life that is about taking care of others. And isn't that what Micah was trying to get across to those people when he said, what does the Lord require of you, O man, but to love justice, to do kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? But then he says, he speaks truth in his heart. The one who's going to come into and live in the presence of God is the one who speaks truth in his heart. Now, there are two thoughts here. One has to do with truth, and the other has to do with heart. So when we think about the idea of truth, maybe in our minds we're thinking of that which is true or honest, or maybe we think about God's Word. We tend to think of what Jesus said in John 17, sanctify them in the truth, thy word is truth. But then there's this idea of heart. The heart, the seat of our emotions, the inner part of our minds. And David says he speaks truth in his heart. Some translations say that he speaks truth from his heart. And so because of that, we tend to think that the idea is that it involves what a person is saying. I mean, Jesus did say that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. But I don't think that's what David's talking about here. He speaks truth in his heart. And here's why I think that. We've spent the last few minutes talking about these three words: integrity, righteousness, and truth. And having studied this particular verse, those are not the three most important words in that verse. The three most important words in that verse are walks, works, and speaks. And I say that because in the original language, they are known as noun-verb participles. And what that means is they function as both a noun and a verb at the same time. So what David is trying to tell us is that the individual who's going to walk into and stay in the presence of God is not just somebody that's about what they do, it's about who they are on the inside. That's the character of the individual. You see, a lot of people can do the actions, but inside their heart is corrupt and filled with evil. I mean, my dad used to tell me, you can fool some of the people some of the time, and maybe fool some of the people a lot of the time. You might even fool a lot of the people most of the time, and even if you could fool all of the people all of the time, you can never fool God. God knows your heart. So when we think about this idea of character, I think this is a great place for us to understand the type of character that God is looking for. And if we were going to summarize this verse in one word, it would be trustworthy. It's a trustworthy character. Now, I'll tell you about something that happened to me years ago. I don't even remember how long ago it was now, but it was long enough ago for you football fans that Houston Nutt was the head football coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. Go Boise. No, sorry. This guy, is it Boise State I need to be saying instead? Okay. I just need to know. I don't. The idea is that I was visiting a Chamber of Commerce banquet, and Houston Nutt was speaking. And so I started to take some notes, and he began to relate to everybody that every incoming freshman into the Arkansas Razorback football program, that they emphasized to them how it was such a great privilege to be an Arkansas Razorback. And he said, we ask every one of them three questions. First question is, can I trust you? Can I trust you to go to class? Can I trust you to do the work that your professor's assigned? Can I trust you to be at practice? Can I trust you? The second question was, are you committed? Are you committed to being an Arkansas Razorback? Are you committed to giving 100% of your effort, both on the field and off the field? Are you committed? When he asked the third question, I don't know what he said after that because I quit listening, because I was taking notes so fast and I was making such a different application than where he was headed with it. But the third question was, do you care? In my mind, I thought, if you take a group of people that you can trust, who are committed to the cause, and who care, you can change the world. In fact, it's those people who do. But I want us to focus for just a second on that first question. Can I trust you? All my life, I've heard lessons. And I understand. I get it. I'll never forget the first time I was going to preach. I hadn't even gone to preaching school yet. My dad wanted me to preach. I was getting ready to start. And so I'm sitting on the front row getting ready to stand before a group about this size, largest group I'd ever stood in front of. And I guess I was a little fidgety. And Dad said, "Are you nervous?" All I could think was, "Yep." I mean, I was scared to death. So he took his Bible out and he opened it up to Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. And he said, "Read this. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean upon your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight." And I get it. We need to put our complete and total trust in God. But that's not the question. The question is, can God trust us? Have you ever thought about it from that perspective? I mean, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 4 that we are stewards of the mysteries of God, and it is required of us as stewards that we be found trustworthy. Worthy of God's trust. I ask that in prayer every day. That God would help me live my life in a way that is worthy of His trust. And I think, can God trust me to be a good student of His Word? Can God trust me to reach out to those who are outside of Christ and bring them into a relationship with Him? To be the salt and the light? Can God trust me to love His church? Can God trust me to be the leader that He wants me to be, that He's prepared me to be? Can God trust me to make the right choices in my life when it comes to the development of my character? Can God trust you? Can He trust me? Usually when I do a lesson, I try to give an application, and usually I try to just focus on one, because one's enough to handle for anybody. But this one kind of has three parts to it, and I think you'll understand as I go through it, about how we can improve our character to be more trustworthy. The first is what I simply call the 10-10-10 principle. I got that from a book by that title, the 10-10-10 principle. I had ordered that book because someone recommended it, and I hadn't read it yet, but I had kind of done the cliff notes. You know, you read the back of the book and you read the outline and you just kind of get an idea of what this is all about. And the idea behind it is simply this. Before we make choices in our life, we have to ask, can I live with this choice 10 minutes from now, 10 months from now, and can I live with it 10 years from now? Now, I think the best way to explain this is by an illustration of something that happened to me several years ago. Several years ago, I received a phone call from a young lady that I knew her and her husband very well, and it was bad. They were headed for divorce. She wanted to know if I would meet with them, and so I agreed to do so. And so we're sitting there and I'm listening to them as they're talking back and forth and trying to figure out all the problems. There was no infidelity. No one had been unfaithful to the other sexually. They just couldn't get along. And they were fighting all the time. And so I asked if I could speak with him for just a few moments. And so she left the room. And so I'm talking to him and I thought, now's as good a time as any to try this thing out. I don't even know what the book teaches, but I'm going to try this theory. And so I asked him, I said, can you live with this decision 10 minutes from now? Can you live with it 10 months from now? And can you live with it 10 years from now? I said, I think I know you well enough that you're mad. You're really mad. And you would have no problem saying, I can live with this easily in 10 minutes. And I think you're probably mad enough that you could say, I can live with it 10 months from now. But I said, can you live with it 10 years from now? And he began to cry. And he said, you're right. I am mad. And I would have no problems living with this decision 10 minutes from now. And I'd have no problems with it 10 months from now. But he said, I don't want to be alone 10 years from now. I said, so how do we fix it? What do we do to fix this? And so he began to explain what he thought would work. And so we got back together, and I'm thankful to say they are faithful Christians who are still married to this day. And it all because of a simple question. Now, the book gives a lot more details to it, and so I'd recommend it if you want to read that. But I thought, if we could, before we make those life-altering changes, and we make a choice that's going to have that kind of impact in our life, if we could just ask, can I live with this 10 minutes from now, 10 months from now, 10 years from now? The second part of this is the idea that we need to take an inventory of our values. What I thought I had originally come up with was this idea of a character audit. I thought, how cool is that? We'll just do a character audit. And I thought I'd made this thing up. And then I read a book here recently. That's what that guy was talking about. And I was like, nothing new under the sun. I had no original thought. But the idea of a character audit, or taking an inventory of our values, is this idea of listing out what are the core values of our life. And then once we list those values out, to look back over the past week, maybe the past month, and ask ourselves, are there areas in my life that have not been consistent with my core values? And if there are areas, the answer is not to try to deny them, to neglect them, shove them under a rug, hoping they'll go away. Instead, the answer is change them. To begin every day making sure that we know our core values and that every choice we make lives up to those core values. And then the third piece is to strive for consistency. No one is going to be perfect. And we don't need to create expectations of others that we think they should be. We just need to be consistent, faithful, if you will, trustworthy. One of the most damaging things that happens in a Christian's life is hypocrisy. Jesus addressed that in regards to the religious leaders, and he tries to tell us the importance of making sure that our words and our actions align, that what we believe and what we profess, that our lives reflect that, because people are watching. And this is about our character. So we have to ask ourselves, Solomon made the statement that a good name is to be more desired than great wealth. So what's more important to us? Our character or money? I mean, would we compromise our character to make more money? What's more important to us, our character or achievement? I mean, would we compromise our character in order to achieve something that we might consider to be great? And what's more important to us, our character or popularity? I mean, would we compromise our character in order to fit in with a specific group of people? It's about character. I realize that every time we assemble as a body of people, that when we get down to the end of a particular lesson, that we call this an invitation. I'm thankful the songs are on PowerPoint, because you don't have that pulling the books out of the pew, you know. It's kind of like signals to everybody, hey, he's wrapping it up. Maybe I am, and maybe I'm not. If I was Hiawatha Jones, I'd just be getting started. I don't like to refer to this as an invitation, and even though that's what it is. But especially as we're thinking about this idea of character, this is really about a decision. It's decision time. It's a choice that every single person in this room is going to make at this moment. Because as you think about the type of character that can step into God's tent and stay and dwell with Him, it's about a choice that we make to have the kind of character that walks with integrity, works righteousness, and speaks truth in their heart. The challenge of being a visiting speaker is that I don't know hardly any of you. I don't know your heart. You do. And you know the types of choices that you've made to bring you to this point. And you know the types of choices that you either do need to make or that you need to continue to stay focused on making. And it may be that the choice you need to make this morning is one that you've been putting off. You realize that you need to be united in the death of Christ and be cleansed by the blood of Jesus, by being immersed in water and raised to walk a new life. Maybe that's the decision you've been putting off. And I can tell you, if you want to walk into God's presence and you want to stay with Him, that's the decision you need to make, and make it today. Because we don't have a guarantee of any time beyond now. But maybe, as you examine your life, you've seen those inconsistencies. And it may not be that it's a sinful situation, and it may not be necessarily something that you need to get off your chest and confess. Maybe it's just you need help. And you need to know that there's a family that loves you and that will rally around you and support you and help you. And if that is the choice you need to make, then now's the time to make that choice. You see, it really is decision time. Choices determine character, and yet our character oftentimes determines the choices that we make. So I'll leave you with this question. What choice will you make when it comes to walking into and dwelling in the presence of our God? Can we help you? If so, please come while we stand and while we sing.